Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on location today. We're going to talk about vitamin D and fish oil, showing a great promise in prevention of cancer, death, and heart attacks, Brigham and Women's Hospital, and an important study. 26,000 men and women participated in this national clinical trial over 5 years. We'll share the results and how it can help you prevent death from heart attacks and cancer, and a lot more behind that. But most of today's program will be developed around the concept of our new article that Richard Gale and I spent virtually all night back and forth to places in America, he in the north and me in the southwest, sharing ideas and writing and rewriting until we finished what we consider one of the most important articles, if not the most important article we have written out of 48 articles on vaccines. It's called America's Crazy, Wild, and Deadly Vaccine Experiment, and it's going to take about 35 minutes to share with you. It is now posted on PRN.fm. For all of the parents listening who are in a difficult situation, either homeschool your children, but then they're going to go after homeschool children, or move out of state because you don't want the danger of your child possibly being paralyzed or damaged for the rest of their life to get into public school, we are addressing those issues. So I suggest you take a few minutes while I'm talking about health and nutrition. Call everyone you know who's concerned, because we're giving you the problems in ways you've not heard before and solutions that we haven't thought of before. So very important that we are ahead of this issue, because the establishment, the states, the legislators in the state who've been influenced, and the federal government, the federal agencies, the mainstream media are all complicit. So we're going to deconstruct this problem and show you what we can do. I also have a video. I don't know if I'll have time for it. If I do, we're going to put it in there. This shows you how corrupt our legislative system is, where a Representative Posey has irrefutable, hard and prima facie evidence of crimes committed against humanity, and especially the African-American community, by William Thompson and colleagues at the CDC. I have the audio tapes. Posey has the audio tapes, plus tens of thousands of documents proving this. And yet in all these years, 5 years since he's had this material, he hasn't been able to get a single congressional hearing to bring Posey and other CDC's official and under oath to have them tell the story of their cover-up and crimes against humanity. What does that tell you about how captured the Democrats, especially the Republicans, have always been captured, but the Democrats pride themselves in being everything they stand for is just absolutely nonsense today. Shame on them, but there is no shame in them, as you can see from their daily missives that construct nothing positive. In any case, I want you to hear. He read this on the floor of the House of Representatives. It's read into the congressional record. Nobody can be ignorant that this information is sitting there. Nobody wants to go near this. This is kryptonite. But we start with something positive, and that is vitamin D and fish oil can help prevent cancer deaths and heart attacks. And this is the largest, most recent to test whether vitamin D and fish oil can effectively prevent cancer and cardiovascular disease. And the results are very promising. The latest results from what is called VITAL will be presented this month at the North American Menopause Society in the annual meeting in Chicago. This is where I mentioned 26,000 men and women participated in this nationwide clinical trial. After more than 5 years of study and treatment, the results show that, for example, the omega-3 fatty acid from fish oil was important, but the biggest improvement was in reduction of primary cardiovascular endpoints, that's a heart attack, and reducing the heart attacks, but also there was even more benefit from taking the omega-3 fatty acids. So two things to take, not difficult, not expensive. From Bond University in Australia, a healthy diet can help prevent kidney disease. Kidney disease is a major disease. So in an analysis, published studies show that a healthy diet is associated with a 30% lower risk of chronic kidney disease. And a healthy dietary regimen is also linked to a 23% lower incidence of albuminuria, an early indicator of kidney damage. So just take this message. If we switch to a plant-based healthy diet, we would substantially lower the risk of chronic kidney disease. And if we have chronic kidney disease, going on a healthy diet, but watching the various mineral components of that, like potassium, could help improve our overall health. From the Federal University of Sergipe in Brazil comes a study published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine that lemongrass, one word, lemongrass, has antipsychotic effects. That's important. They evaluated the potential anti-anxiety effects of lemongrass aroma in healthy volunteers subjected to anxiety-inducing situations. And the researchers recruited the volunteers for the study, divided them into four groups, and then asked the first group to inhale lemongrass essential oil. And by the way, it's generally 3 to 6 drops of lemongrass essential oil that's put into a diffuser, and then you just put it on your desk or on your bedside table or in the kitchen, wherever you're at, and you're breathing in the vapors of the lemongrass. And another group inhaled a tea tree oil, like green tea. A third group inhaled distilled water. And the fourth group, nothing. And immediately after inhalation, they subjected each volunteer to the same identical experimental model of anxiety. And the researchers evaluated the parameters, the state of anxiety, subjective tension, tranquilization and sedation, and heart rate and electromyogram activity before and after. And the results were substantial. So based upon these results, the researchers concluded that even brief exposure to lemongrass essential oil has antipsychotic benefits. So when you're anxious, for whatever reason, it would be good to have lemongrass essential oil. It's a little tiny bottle. It's very inexpensive. And get a little diffuser. That's, what, $30? And just put it wherever you're spending most of your time. And 10 to 15 minutes is all it takes. Now, for those of us who've been using essential oils as part of helping people rebalance their biochemistry, we already knew all this. But this is important because this is getting out to the regular people and physicians and scientists. From the University of Cincinnati comes a study published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Environmental Health Perspectives, and it's about air pollution. Now, we're not talking about the air pollution you see in Beijing or in Jakarta and other countries where there's mass pollution. We're talking about in cities where you're driving, walking, and you don't see any air pollution. Then again, you don't see the plastic microcrystallization in the water, but it's in all the fish that you're eating. And you don't see it on the beach, but it's in the beaches as well. So this is the nanoparticles, the small particulate matter pollution, and it's getting into people's lungs, especially children, and it's causing mental health issues in children. This was done at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. So what is the takeaway message? If you have a child and you're raising him because of circumstances and you have no choice, let's say in any of the 5 boroughs of New York or places where there's lots of traffic or near an airplane landing and takeoff route, then you're getting pollution, even if you're not aware of it, even if you've adapted to it. It's not good. As much as possible, put plants into your home environment and work environment, because the plants absorb these toxicants from the air and give you oxygen in its place. Also, air purifiers with the smallest possible micron filtration system, so it's getting the smallest air particulate matter out. And generally, a good unit will run you, a really good unit, let's say $700, but it'll handle about 1,500 square feet. So most people's workspace is a small margin of 1,500 square feet, and they're on rollers. You could roll it in at night to a bedroom. You could have it where most people are going to be, which is smaller than 1,500 square feet. Your living room, kitchen, and dining room are not 1,500 square feet. So it's worth it, especially your lungs, because they're getting blocked up and diseased because of this. From the University of Hawaii, pesticide exposure can increase heart disease and stroke risk. This is the Journal of the American Heart Association. And what it's saying is this, that on-the-job exposure to high levels of pesticides raise the risk of heart disease and stroke in a generally healthy group of Japanese American men living in Hawaii. So to me, the takeaway message is that you have to be conscious of anything that you or your neighbors are using to spray on their property. We do not need to use toxic pesticides. We've never had to use them, but we've been led to believe that we need them. Thousands of you, I mean, we're talking about probably up to 20,000 listeners between 1971 and 1984, came up to the Fertiller Farm, most on the weekends, and the vast majority, anywhere from 100 to 600 people, and I would do classes. I would show them in an area called Stone Ridge, and it was Stone Ridge because there was no dirt. It was just stones everywhere. That how you can turn that into very good quality soil, and there was a garden there. There was a pond nearby. I dredged the pond. I let the water seep out of the mud for about 3 months, and then used that phenomenal rich soil with all. In any case, back to the point I was making, that any time that you are exposed to any pollutant, ask, what is the pollutant you're spraying? People spray pesticides in their backyard. Almost all the people coming up to the Fertiller Farm had small gardens or had lawns, and they were using regular toxic pesticides. When I showed them they could make a solution with apple cider vinegar, cayenne pepper, and garlic juice, and dilute that in a gallon of water, then have a little pump spray and go around and spray the ground and the leaves, it would not hurt the plant, but the insects didn't want to go near it then. And they would go through and look at all the leaves of the thousands of plants, and they couldn't find a single one that had been insect damaged. Now, had I not done that, there'd have been nothing. Also, there are rabbits and deers, and you put up a barrier fence, and that helps prevent it. And also, they don't like these tastes either. They're too bitter for them, especially the cayenne pepper and the apple cider vinegar. Just something simple. But here we are today where everyone's spraying these pesticides on their lawns, not realizing you're walking on the lawn. Now you're walking back into the house. Whatever is on your shoe or foot is now on the floor or carpet or tile. It's going to dry. It's going to aerize. It's going to go in the air. You're going to breathe it in. And this is how we end up with these pesticide residues infecting us, and roughly 45% higher risk of heart disease or stroke if you have a high pesticide exposure. So this is something significant, to go natural and organic. A couple more. Mashhad University of Medical Sciences found that black seed oil is proven as a natural kidney stone treatment in humans. A lot of people have trouble about 500,000 a year in the United States because of kidney stones. In a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled human clinical trial, found that black cumin, C-U-M-I-N, seed oil, a teaspoon in the morning, a teaspoon in the evening, generally diluted in a smoothie, can help the body pass those. It's about 1,000 milligrams of black oil. It's not a lot, but it can, boy, can it can make a difference. And also from General Hospital of Vienna, another study presented at the European Association for the Study of Diabetes found that a low vitamin D level, meaning you don't have enough vitamin D, you increase your risk of premature death from all causes. So, and also from the University of Pittsburgh, hot flashes are shown to be linked to increased risk of later cardiovascular disease events. So there's a lot you can do. I have an article on this. It's free. It's up on my web on what to do about menopause to reverse menopausal symptoms and therefore help improve the quality of your life, but also help prevent a cardiovascular event. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall on location. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to address a very important issue, the so-called proven science that justifies mass immunization, including mandatory vaccines. So we're going to deconstruct this. And by the way, on yesterday's program, I responded to Tucker Carlson. I gave him opportunity to lay out his position in 6 minutes, uninterrupted, non-edited. And then I deconstructed his arguments, presenting actual factual material that could help enlighten him that he's been following the wrong playbook on this. And my hope is that he could open himself up and change. And Mitchell Rabin, a Better World Foundation president, wrote and said, quote, "It was under a Republican Nixon that the Clean Air and Water Acts were implemented. That's part of a conservative view in reality. A Republican started the Environmental Protection Agency. Get with it, Tucker!" Exclamation mark. Good. Thank you, Tucker, but you should really send that, the 10 articles that we have posted on progressiveradionetwork.com or prn.fm, send those articles and yesterday's broadcast, at least that segment, to Tucker Carlson's program. He has a large staff, lots of quality producers. Let them see a different perspective. And we are always encouraged when people in the audience share the information. And I had at least 10 emails yesterday, and I'm not looking at any more emails. I'm on the road. I'm packed with what I have to get done before our clinical study starts Sunday. But people kept asking, wouldn't it be great if you helped Linda Ronstadt? And I said, I'm not calling anyone. If people want my help, I'm happy to help them for free. But they've got to reach out to my office. Here's my office number for anybody with a life-challenging condition where it cannot be changed by regular medicine. Our number is 646-926-5459. 646-926-5459. That goes directly to Travis, and he will get the information that a person needs. But they've got to speak with me personally if they want to be helped. But it's only with conditions, only conditions. Let me spell that, O-N-L-Y, only conditions that are terminal, hers is terminal, or medically irreversible. Those are the only two that I will address and create protocols and help them. All right, otherwise you'll get everyone call. I got an itch on my back, and oh, what's this fungus under my nail? No, those, there are many other places to get help for. Back in a moment with America's crazy, wild, deadly vaccine experiment. I'd like to welcome everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is an original in-depth investigative report. Richard Gale, Senior Research Fellow, and our in-staff scholar. He comes from the background in genetic engineering and sciences. Neil Greenfeld, a scholar, legal scholar, and he is on this article, and myself. The article is entitled America's Crazy, Wild, and Deadly Vaccination Experiment. September 20th may be recognized as the day when the 16-year-old Swedish activist Greta Thunberg led the world's youth to protest en masse against the failures of our governments to tackle the existential threats from climate change. Now, tens of millions of youth globally are not only speaking out against those in power, but also challenging them. A few days earlier, Greta confronted and provoked the U.S. Congress to listen to the climate scientists. On the 23rd of September, addressing the United Nations, she released her outrage towards the world's leaders and adults who have been complicit in robbing the younger generation of their innocence and future. Aside from its frequent hubris and platitudes and indifference towards meaningful climate policies, for its part, the New York Times provided in-depth coverage and analysis of Greta's American visit. However, shame on the New York Times and its editors and management for recently ignoring completely the medical science that confirms vaccines are likewise robbing many of our youth's futures. Over the years, on too many topics to list, the Times has become the new media face for 21st century fascism. It has increasingly become a soulless, ideologically driven mouthpiece for the corporate elite, notably the pharmaceutical industry. On the one hand, the newspaper celebrates the marching of youth against global warming. Good for them. I support that. They're on the right side of that issue. But with the other hand, it mocks and disparages the hundreds of thousands of parents with millions of children injured or killed by vaccines. And yet, all of these parents were once willing supplicants and true believers in vaccines' benefits. The fact they submitted their infants and toddlers to the care of their pediatricians is enough evidence to state these parents were all pro-vaccination advocates. By doing so, they innocently and likely unintentionally turned their trust over to the CDC and private vaccine makers with a false belief that these biologically active drugs were effective and safe. Why else, then, provide them or mandate them to the American public? Only afterwards, with neurologically and permanently damaged children or chronically injured children, the largest number of chronically injured children in American history, 43%, let me repeat that, 43% of all children in the United States suffer from chronic illnesses. We've never seen this in our history before. Now, here's what we have to understand. Did they regret their faith in a system that values profit higher than health? Over the years, we have gotten to know many of these parents, to understand the horrible ordeals they undergo with children who may never be normal again. They have educated themselves with a passion, all about vaccines, thousands of hours spent, lots of communications, in-depth reading, far better, in my opinion, than any pediatrician we have ever interviewed. If you want to win a sure bet, place your money on any of these moms of vaccine-injured children in a debate with the vaccine industry's leading pundit, Dr. Paul Offit. While preparing this article, we have had conversations and email exchanges with legal experts in international declarations that condemn medical experimentation without an individual's consent and constitutional law. One is Danny Sheehan, arguably one of America's finest and most ethical constitutional attorneys. It was Danny's insights that led to the New York Times upper management to publish the Pentagon Papers. But today, Danny, like ourselves, is deeply disappointed in the rapid degeneration of America's journalism, notably led by the New York Times. Over the years, we have written approximately 50 articles with full citation of scientific studies from peer-reviewed literature, including PubMed, the government's own official website on acceptable and credible scientific literature, in order to expose the myths, the facade, the misinformation being disseminated by our federal health agencies and the vaccine industrial complex. It would take any journalist only a couple of days to undertake a sufficient amount of in-depth research to discover the prima facie evidence that the CDC is a serial liar and has been actively engaged in obstruction of justice, perjury before Congress, and massive cover-ups to conceal the dangers of specific vaccines and vaccine ingredients and their contributions, unfortunately contributing to an epidemic of injuries being inflicted upon America's infants, children, and youth. The same can be said for the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the Department of Health and Human Services that oversees all of these, as well as the Independent American Academy of Pediatrics. Each aligns itself with vaccine policies that favor corporate financial interest at the expense of public health and honesty. During those couple of days of research, journalists would find dozens of board-certified physicians who have spent individually thousands of hours delving into the more scientifically arcane literature in peer-reviewed journals to uncover a litany of scientific reasons to challenge our vaccine policies and the CDC's childhood vaccination schedule. However, to do that, mainstream journalists will be turning against their handlers, doctors for hire, corporate shills, astroturf groups, agent provocateurs, and most importantly, drug lobbyists and corporate advertising dollars. They have captured, in our opinion, the New York Times and almost every other major news outlet in America. Why? To circulate deceitful narratives that vaccines are effective and safe. Their message, therefore, is for every child and adult to bow in obedience to their needles. At this moment, a concerted effort is underway across the United States to introduce legislation that will mandate vaccines for all children before attending school, and now in California for adults as well. It's a bill. It's being proposed, and constitutional, religious, and philosophical rights for vaccine exemptions are being rescinded. In the case of California, even pediatricians' expertise and knowledge of their patients are being questioned in order to reduce medical exemptions. Senator Richard Pans and California's law professor Dorit Reese vision is to create an overarching medical police network run by bureaucrats to enforce vaccination and be the final decision makers on whether a child can be medically exempt or not. In effect, the private physician-patient or pediatrician-child relationship would be obsolete with respect to vaccination laws. The state would control your body. In effect, break it to its most simple terms, you have no right of choice over your body, not with vaccines. Hold on a second. Didn't we just have a 60-year battle of my body, my choice? Yes. But that was for abortion. And a woman should have that right. And you hope that with deep introspection and reflection, the person makes the right choice. But with vaccines, you do not have that choice. So in effect, the state controls your body and is capable of inflicting punitive damages and social isolation and harassment, even arrest in some cases, if you refuse to turn over your child to the state. Does it get any more Orwellian? So the question before us is whether or not vaccine mandates and abolishing religious and philosophical exemptions are constitutional and, in effect, in violation of international declarations that protect citizens from medical experimentation that places them at risk of serious injury and death. We interviewed law professor Mary Holland. Here's what she had to say before the entire United Nations that came out to hear her presentation on the protection of human rights from, quote, grave dangers of involuntary scientific and medical experimentation on human subjects, end quote. She presented her legal case that, quote, vaccines must be recommended, not coerced by government bodies of authority. Compulsion on its face undermines the fundamental rights to life, liberty, and bodily integrity of informed consent, privacy, and parental decision-making, she said. She invoked Dr. Leo Alexander's warning during the Nuremberg doctor trials, which tried 23 Nazi physicians on criminal counts of murdering, injuring, and torturing non-consenting Jews and other victims under the auspices of medical experimentation. Dr. Alexander warned that it is from small beginnings that the values of an entire society may be subverted. Now, aside from what I just said, where else could we see an example of from small beginnings? How about Barack Obama's National Defense Authorization Act and all of its supporters on the left, which was the entire left, except for The Nation magazine, and thank goodness for them on this issue. But they were not a counterbalance. And today, if you show up for any demonstration, including this latest one, there are going to be everything done to infiltrate these groups, environmental groups, peace groups, any group, under the auspices of the National Defense Authorization Act, where you can be arrested, you can be tortured, enhanced interrogated, you can be put into black ops sites that were supposed to have been closed, but that's a lie, and you can be murdered, all with the full approval and complete legal protection of the National Defense Authorization Act. That is not an extreme example. That is a real example of what happens when you think that something is being done for the greater benefit without looking at how could it be subverted. Injuries and deaths of innocents were collateral damage for the Reich's imperial aims. The medical experiments conducted by the Nazis should continue to serve as a harsh lesson and an admonition to government health institutions and policymakers about the potential evils medicine can inflict upon society when medical authorities become divorced from a moral base and serve only totalitarian regimes of making profit. The corporatization of medicine is complete, and hence they no longer serve on any level the public good. In his open remarks at the start of the Nuremberg Doctrine hearings, General Telford Taylor, who presided over the trial, stated, quote, I do not think the German people have as yet any conception of how deeply the criminal folly that was Nazism bit into every phase of German life, or how utterly ravaging the consequences were. It will be our task to make these things clear. Today, one could replace German people for Americans and point fingers of criminal folly at California Senator Pan, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, and our entire federal health establishment. I'm talking about the entirety of our establishment, the entirety of our federal bureaucracies, the entirety of the FDA and CDC, that should more appropriately be labeled as criminal organizations for hire. And all of the vaccine makers, such as Merck specifically, they're in contraindication of everything that is ethical, and they're in gross violation of ethical principles established at Nuremberg. General Taylor went on to state, quote, a nation which deliberately infects itself with poison will inevitably sicken and die. The conclusions of the Nuremberg Tribunal unequivocally state that, quote, voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. Individuals must be able to exercise free power of choice without the intervention of any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, or other ulterior forms of constraint or coercion, end quote. Moreover, people must be provided with, quote, sufficient knowledge and comprehension of the elements of the subject matter involved as to enable them to make and understanding an enlightened decision, end quote. That was Nuremberg Tribunal, 1949, page 181 of their report. We read the entire report. Well, based upon the wording of the tribunal's medical ethics and the subsequent Helsinki Declaration, our federal health agencies and state legislatures are now ramming through draconian criminal vaccine mandates that can technically be accused of similar but lesser crimes. Unfortunately, such international accords and declarations are not legally binding. Following a conversation with Kevin Berry, a former federal prosecutor who launched a state constitutional legal challenge against the state of New York to repeal the stripping away of residents' right to vaccine religious exemptions, noted that such declarations serve as guidelines and anyone can file human rights violations, citing the UN's Universal Declaration for Bioethics and Human Rights. However, it's a tricky slope. Constitutional attorney and founder of the Rutherford Institute, John Whitehead, told us that, quote, the U.S. Constitution cannot be overridden by international law. Such laws are only binding if ratified in treaty and are superior to state laws, however, not equivalent to the U.S. Constitution. And the U.S. has never ratified any of these international declarations that can have an impact upon the human rights violations charged in coercive vaccine mandates. If international laws are to have any effect, it would be on state and local laws, since that is where the vaccination requirements would be imposed. So the edifice upon our modern vaccination regime is built, relies upon the hypothesis of herd immunity. Absent a belief in the plausibility of herd immunity, there is no scientifically sound basis whatsoever for enforcing vaccination mandates. Ultimately, it is a dishonest marketing stunt of garbage in, garbage out. Theoretically, scientists who have faith in herd immunity argue that 95% of the population must be vaccinated in order to protect the smaller percentage who are not immunized, and to eventually eradicate an infectious disease. But do your homework, dig deeply, and what you will find that this is absurd. But for this theory to have any validity, vaccines must be perfectly effective and safe and provide long-term immunity. Our research, none of them, not a single vaccine, can say that with any honesty. Now, since the recent measles outbreaks have been the primary engine behind state governments' vaccines hysteria, we can take the MMR vaccine as an example that should put the credibility of herd immunity to rest. For the measles vaccine, according to a CDC study, the population at any given time can have less than 70% immunity. This is despite the fact that the MMR compliance in the United States has reached 98%, meaning 98% of Americans have received the MMR vaccine. One of the most damning incidents of measles outbreak took place at Boston University a month after a campus blood drive. I shouldn't say 98% of all Americans, but in those that were in the vaccine groups are supposed to be protected, and they reached 98%. As a result, health officials have had access to a large selection of blood samples of students both infected and measles-free. Well, laboratory analysis found that 8 out of 9 students with full-blown measles had been fully vaccinated. We may also take a look at China, which is believed to have the highest vaccination compliance rate in the world. The measles vaccine is mandatory on the Chinese mainland, and they're strict about it. So why are there over 700 different measles outbreaks in a 3-year period between 2009 and 2012? Obviously, the vaccine is not effective. Another medical discovery that debunks the herd immunity theory behind the MMR is that live virus vaccines shed. This means that a vaccine's viral component can be transmitted and infect persons that a vaccinated person comes into contact with, let's say from your saliva out of your nose. The best documented case occurred in New York City in 2011 when an adult woman received two MMR vaccines and subsequently infected four others in her workplace. Two of those infected were immunized with two MMR vaccines. All patients involved in this incident were confirmed by laboratory testing that the outbreak was due to the failure in the MMR vaccine. Let me make it very clear. It was the MMR vaccine that infected the others. If a vaccinated person can infect others, then this destroys the argument behind vaccination mandates that raises fear to a myth that an unvaccinated child is a danger to everyone, especially to children and the elderly who are immune compromised with serious illnesses such as cancer or an autoimmune disease. This is a lie. Attorney Kevin Berry calls this propaganda strategy effective brainwashing. The facts are quite the opposite given the live MMR cases mentioned above. Rather, it is the vaccinated person who poses the greatest threat to an immunocompromised person, never discussed in the New York Times. Finally, aside from these contradictory findings that discredit herd immunity, measles outbreaks are financial boons for drug makers. Following the Disneyland outbreak, Bloomberg News reported that Merck's quarterly MMR sales increased by 24%, proving that fear-mongering is also equally profitable. If the herd immunity rationale for mandating vaccines is a fallacy, then are the nation's vaccination policies and requirements and regimens actually an unfounded medical experiment being forced upon children and adults? Health officials make every effort to convince us that the debate over vaccine safety is settled. It is as if we are told that the medical establishment already knows everything necessary about vaccines' effects on the human organism. Therefore, it is irrational to believe that vaccination can be perceived as an ongoing experiment being waged upon infants, children, and adults alike. However, real science is far from settled. There are gaping holes in all the government's arguments. There are many reasons on scientific and methodological grounds to conclude medicine knows far less about vaccine efficacy and safety than it believes, and the current vaccination schedule is a massive experiment legislatively enforced upon the nation's population. Large swaths of clinical and laboratory research identifying the mechanisms by which vaccines cause injury and death are cast aside and more often categorically denied. Studies now mandating vaccinations, and in the case of California, rewriting medical exemption definitions to put the decision-making in the hands of non-scientific bureaucrats, are acting in direct violation of every precautionary principle in American scientific and medical history. And the fact remains that vaccines have not been tested properly to establish any conclusion for their safety. Worse, the vaccination policies are being adopted on a sloppy and unfounded one-size-fits-all model contrary to the principles of precision medicine. I'll give you examples. Dr. Alvin Moss is one of the most respected physicians in America. He is professor and of several categories of medicine. He is section chief in the Department of Medicine at a large state university. He has also been a practicing physician for 40 years, and he is a critic of the current vaccination schedule and policies in the vaccine misinformation being disseminated by the CDC. He has authored over 150 articles in peer-reviewed literature, and he's a contributing editor to the Journal of the American Medical Association, The Lancet, and the New England Journal of Medicine. I mean, he's in the who's who of medical hierarchy, but he is an ethical person, and he's a medical doctor and a scientist. He's generated a list of the most worrisome failures in the current vaccinations schedule on the market. Among those are the most disquieting. We've selected just some. Here's what you're not being told in the New York Times, the CDC, the FDA, the Washington Post, or any of the other mainstream media. So please pay attention. This is important for your rights. aside from the human papillomavirus vaccine Gardasil, no other vaccine has ever been tested against proper inert placebo-controlled studies. Every vaccine is categorically a pharmaceutical drug. However, unlike common over-the-counter and prescription medications, vaccines have not been tested against an inert placebo, like a salt solution, a saline solution. In the absence of such safety, it is virtually impossible to make any scientific conclusion about what vaccines' real adverse reactions are. During a recent radio broadcast, back it was last night, Dr. Moss reviewed the trial data of the new MMR vaccine developed by Glaxo. Glaxo is now seeking its approval for the U.S. market to compete with Merck's MMR monopoly. The company's human trials compared only one vaccinated group against another vaccinated group. Mind you, how is that even legitimate? How can you have a placebo if both groups are getting a vaccine? As with all vaccine trials, volunteers are duly screened in order to enroll only the healthiest participants. So anyone who had a mild but chronic health condition were immediately excluded. Dr. Moss noted that 10% of these healthy children in both groups had to be rushed to the emergency room for adverse events after being given the vaccine. Over 3% developed chronic disorders, including autoimmune disease, asthma, type 1 diabetes, vasculitis, celiac disease, thrombocytopenia, and allergies. Earlier Gardasil trials were even more frightening. 17 of the girls enrolled in the Gardasil trial died. So let us pause for a moment and ask a few questions. This is a very sobering report. This is not the type of investigative reporting article that I like doing, because it seems as if we're helpless, that the powers that be, the pharmaceutical industry with their enormous budgets, the PR firms they control, and then the message they send out to the media and all of the AstroTurf groups, the personal attacks against anyone who advocates for sanity within vaccine research, meaning doing real, honest, double-blind, placebo-controlled studies with a placebo, testing all of the ingredients for their toxicology, understanding the immune system, then I believe the American public would support vaccination, providing it was not mandatory. But it is mandatory, and it's a huge multi-billion-dollar industry, shortly to be $100 billion a year, with no possibility of you suing any manufacturer, no matter how gross they're negligent or intentional. So what do we do? Well, the end of my report, which will take about another 15 minutes, and I don't have that time now, so you can read the entire report. Please go to prn.fm and download the report, read it, and share it. But here are a few positive suggestions before we end our program today. For the last 20 years, there has been virtually no major change in our environmental policies in the United States. Now, I'm going to use the environment as an example of what we can do. We have not caused industries to switch from relying upon fossil fuels or the nuclear industry or the coal industry or the gas hydrofracking industry or the oil industry. We have not insisted by mandate that by a certain date they go from fossil fuel to non-polluting and renewable energy. We have had no education program to the American public of the dangers of eating meat and the growing of animals for that meat, which increases our carbon footprint and increases what we don't want. We don't want global warming and the consequences of rising oceans and worse storms and greater rainfall, etc. But what happened was, with all the environmental groups, of which there have been thousands, with all the people concerned about the environment, which are probably a few million at least, nothing has changed. Nothing. With no consequence to those who continue polluting. I could say the same about vaccines. Right now, conservatively, we have at least 4 million and more likely 7 million adults and their children who have been adversely affected by vaccines. We have at least 100 different vaccine groups comprised mainly of parents who have done their homework now and realize how dangerous vaccines actually are. We have a handful of attorneys, such as Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who brought lawsuits. We have a few people in the media who've tried to tell the truth, like Cheryl Atkinson on CBS, and she paid a price because that was one of the reasons they fired her. We have nonstop pro-vaccine positioning in the media. The New York Times has been pro-vaccine and attacking anyone who questions it, no matter the legitimacy of their concerns. So where do we stand? We stand in a difficult place, but not impossible. Here's what we can do. First and foremost, Richard Gale and myself have researched and written nearly 50 articles on every vaccine and everything wrong with every vaccine, and showing from the peer-reviewed literature this information. So education is the very first step to liberation. You must be aware of a problem to prevent it or change it. So share these articles, read them, and share them with everyone. We have produced 4 multi-award-winning documentaries, the latest being Deadly Deception, about the politics and profiteering in the vitamins and the bad science, in vaccines, and the bad science about vaccines. And all the leading characters are there. We really deconstruct that the vaccine industry is not about, and never has been about, saving our lives. It's about profit. And who's behind this? And how did they get away with it? And how much money they pay legislators to keep them in power? Also, we have the other vaccine, Silent Epidemic, then Vaccine Nation, then Autism Made in the USA. So watch these films. They're on my YouTube channel. Share those points of view with others as well. Everything we have written and produced has never been challenged on accuracy. We have never had to change a single sentence in any of our articles or a single comment in any of our documentaries, because all of our work is meticulously referenced, and then it's vetted by our team of lawyers in office and our scholarly review. So share the information, become informed before an accident, not after. Then we have to use our collective power together. Now, young 16-year-old Greta Thunberg, one year ago, was a single young 15-year-old sitting outside of her school with a little poster talking about global warming. Today, she is the most popular voice and the most powerful and dynamic person in the entire environmental movement on the planet. Now, yes, there are people behind who are manipulating her, but she comes from an honest and a very important place. She is intelligent and she's committed. Now, imagine what happens when you have tens of millions of teenagers behind you. Why couldn't, and then telling their parents, we don't want to eat meat. You know, we're not going to buy stuff that we don't need. We're not going to fly on private planes. They're going to bring a change to the environmental movement. Let's plant trees. They're going to do that. Why can't we do the same thing by getting the teenagers in every home to be aware of the dangers of vaccines and the lack of honest science there? Why can't we then bring all of this to a national movement? Have a national day where everyone concerned about vaccines comes together and marches. My office is willing to help with organizing such an effort, but we need the cooperation of individuals, not just vaccine victims. We need people who think, this is something I should be concerned about, because now they're going to try to mandate vaccines for adults, not just children. So if we can organize, which is possible, look, if a Swedish 16-year-old can organize millions of people worldwide and suddenly turn on the lights of our hubris and indifference in the United States on environment, one 16-year-old, are you kidding me? She has a greater awareness and a greater capacity to cause change than all of our scientists, physicians, all of our legislators, the EPA, all of the environmentalists and their groups, the Sierra Club, Greenpeace. She did more than all of them put together for the last 20 years. They made a lot of money for their NGOs and nonprofit foundations. Nothing changed. She's causing change, and she's adamant. She's angry. She's outraged. Shouldn't we become angry and outraged and commit ourselves to causing demonstrations in front of the CDC, where we bring the lawyers, we bring the constitutional lawyers, we bring the victims, African-American children who were victimized because the CDC allowed the MMR vaccine to be used on African-American boys 36 months and younger, causing a 324% increase in autism. Shouldn't we make that a point? Look, they've eliminated religious exemptions. Where in the hell are the religious leaders in our country, except for asking for more money to private, you know, to have more private jets? Shouldn't the religious leaders, I wouldn't go into a congregation that wasn't committed itself into protecting its population. It protects its reputation. It protects its income flow. Well, why don't you tell the rabbi? Why don't you tell the imam? Why don't you tell the preacher? Why don't you tell the minister? Isn't it time we took our message of common shared spiritual values to the street? Or is that too radical? Is that too extreme? No, it's time. It's time that we walk away from any movement that is not walking towards us. Don't tell me what I should believe in. You have no right to do that. Don't stand upon virtue shaming and somehow that you are more enlightened than the rest of us. You're merely a person who's fortunate enough to have us in your midst and we're paying attention. So why don't you take your message and sermons, which are about the same every week, out on the street, organize every religious group in America, organize every church, synagogue, and march together. If they're taking away your religious exemptions, shouldn't that cause some concern in some religious people somewhere in this country? And yet it hasn't. I've yet to see anyone out there, except for Reverend Barber, challenging the lack of commitment by parishioners to their own salvation in the real world. We're not talking about the afterlife. We're talking about right here and now. Protect our bodies. Allow us to have healthy children. So let's get the religious leaders of America, and if you're a congregant, get the message to them. Share the articles, share the videos, and let them protest, and especially the African-American. Every African-American preacher in America should be outraged that the CDC continued the Tuskegee experiment in a different guise by institutional racism, by knowing that African-American boys were going to be more susceptible to autism, and yet hiding that and covering it up. That alone should mean that every one of the millions upon millions, tens of millions of African-Americans should be protesting. So let's organize. Let's demonstrate. Let's shut down cities. Let's shut down agencies. Let's boycott agencies. Let's boycott advertisers. You see, that's the answer we have. So here's the question. We have the tools. We have the experts. We have the victims willing to come forward and share their stories. Do we have the personal will to do it? Are we going to wait until there is no option left? Until everyone in America must be vaccinated, and then we see the body count, we see the suffering. And then, and only then, do we decide, maybe I should have done something then. Take a lesson from Greta Thunberg. Now's the time to focus all of the concerns you have into organizing and marching. If we had 5 or 10 million people show up for a march, 10 million people would be the biggest march in America. In fact, bigger even than the march to stop the war in 2003 in Iraq. And that would get legislators' attention, state legislators, because we would say state by state, we're not going to vote for you unless you vote to allow religious and health exemptions and philosophical exemptions. And the same with congressional leaders. And then boycott the New York Times. Boycott the television networks. Boycott them. Watch their ratings dip and their advertising revenue subside. That's the only power we have at this moment. Showing up at conferences where everyone there is a victim and talking about your victimization to victims doesn't change anything. We have to be proactive and get in their face. I'm Gary Nall. I told you I'd end with some positive solutions. These are positive solutions. Now it's up for us to do it. And I am there to help. We have already given you the tools. We've given you the science. We've given you the documentaries. We've given you the investigative reports. We've shown you who the scoundrels are, the liars are, We've shown you where the sociopaths are. We've shown you the unmitigated greed. We have all the evidence we've given you. Please use it wisely. But at least come forward with intent to be a conscientious, concerned American. Thank you and have a nice day.